blessings of
love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. Yet in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient and anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May one find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is a holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibited precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Sunday morning groups are recorded and made available to monthly donors. What should we look at this morning?
Okay. I'd like to explore something that I'm beginning to see around the email class, so I'll give a little back context.
Okay.
So the assignment was to look around, well, for me, what I'm looking at is the concept of the experience of unconditional love or fear, and how the energy in the first chakra, where those are sort of the two orientations, and we're the assignment was to sort of kind of calibrate to life to see. So what I've been doing is practicing just bringing the attention to the base of the spine, saying to myself, unconditional love, and just noticing what happens. And you know, when I see the color red, that helps remember, but just helps me remember, but just whenever it drops in to do that. And so I had a interesting conversation on the recorder that I just wanted to sort of bring out around something that I hadn't really recognized as perhaps that fear. So I've always had this, for as long as I've been aware of things in the world, had this kind of shock and horror around, you know, people like Gandhi and MLK, how they were about such good, but people got killed. You're trying to do such good, and I would imagine like being them and feeling responsible for all of those people dying because of what my words had said or what, you know, what it is. So that.
Oh, so you're not talking about them being killed.
No, all the people that were killed because they were because of what they were leading, you know, by the authorities, by the other authorities.
Which is just interesting in itself, right? That cause and effect being put together.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. That's been always the perspective. Like, God, imagine saying all of these inspiring things, and then like people are mobilized. They do this, and then somebody comes and kills them because of what, you know, like that. And then Sherry said something on a recent facilitator call that struck me, and she said, see, I don't actually think we're here to stay alive, no matter what. Doesn't that, I mean, imagine, like, spoke right, you know.
It's such a clear assumption that we walk around with as conditioned humans, that living, existing, me existing, is the highest, most important thing.
Yeah. So, let me see what it feels like, it's all related to unconditional love, fear. Because where I can project easily that Gandhi and MLK and all those Jesus and all those people were coming from was just this abandon into unconditional love, mm-hmm. just total dissolving into this unconditional love, no matter what happened to them or anybody. You know, it's like just dissolving, right? And that clearly has having been a serious block. In karmic block for this person, and kind of getting that.
So if I'm tracking, projecting onto someone like Gandhi or Martin Luther King, a sense of just letting go into that unconditional love and not getting caught in the what you're describing as that conditioned cause and effect. Well, yeah, but if I do this, then this could happen, and this could happen, and this could happen. And seeing the orientation, the karmic orientation that is something that you've worked with. Is getting caught in that fear.
Yeah,
bad things could happen.
Yeah. And so the direct experience of just going to unconditional love at will, with no, there's no stakes, one's life's at stake. That has to be in big quotes, because clearly this person's life is at stake all the time.
Right.
Every single moment.
Right.
But training to do that just when I see the color red or whatever.
Yeah. And even that at will part is so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the training is almost, calibrating is such a good word for it.
Yeah.
Because we're training to be there, we could say. We're training to calibrate to that instead of willing to get there.
That is such a good point. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that you made that point. Because how that snuck in at will,
I'm gonna do it.
I'm gonna tell you. I got another example, a little story that dropped in that I think is related. It seems so unrelated, but so after group Thursday night, there was a song mentioned, a camp song, and so I could remember three or four lines of that song, and I couldn't remember the others. And it was one of those things where it just latches onto your brain, like, I can't remember what is that. So I had about 2,000 or 3,000 steps to do after group. So as I was pacing around my hermitage, I was trying to think, what are those words? You know, I was thinking. Suddenly it just dropped in to just start singing the song. And I'll be darned if every single word of that song didn't come out of my mouth. It was shocking to me. It was all there, but this process was never going to get it.
Yeah. It reminds me of what we were talking about recently in some context of that, so you're at the scene of a crime, and then you're interviewed later, and it's like, I didn't see the guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then you're hypnotized, and every detail is there.
Yeah.
So awareness is picking up all of it. But that, small mind that I'm going to figure out.
Yes, I'm going to remember. I think it dropped in just not to say that because of that calibrating. So in that moment when I started singing was the calibrating.
Yeah.
And it was all there.
Yeah, and that is such an important difference, isn't it? Because that I'm going to will myself to do it is so open for just the other side of duality. Oh, I didn't see. Now I'm not doing it. Why am I not doing it? I got to do it. Okay.
Oh my gosh, that just feels so huge. I'm just seeing, like right now as you're talking, I'm just seeing example after example from life, from this life, it feels like such a whoosh, like such a. Awareness.
Yeah, as you say that, as I look at my own experience, it's like, it almost feels more like a surrendering, too.
Yeah.
Because that is, it's like, life is such a, it's the quiver thing. It's, an exercise in a email class long ago, and then I think it's in the,
I think so, yeah.
But that quiver, because life is pulling us, it's just that we're so trained to the conversation. That it usually can so easily pull us off that, you know, because life isn't insistent, it doesn't scream at us.
Yeah.
But when we surrender, when we're willing to let go, to be out of the conversation, we so beautifully get calibrated.
Uh-huh.
In a sense.
Yeah, we get mm-hmm. calibrated.
Mm-hmm.
And because even calibrating, it suggests there's a someone who is like, I meant like turning a dial on our old time radio.
Almost, not quite.
Yeah. But it really is kind of just the opposite of that, being a someone who's doing that, but a total, and maybe that is the whoosh, it's just uh-huh. a total letting go,
yeah.
the dissolving.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, there's so much gratitude with that, isn't there? When we just get that whoosh of just being placed with life.
That was really helpful, because what I was looking at in the email class and you said I wasn't getting it. And then this morning, every morning I set an intention. I just let it drop in. And what it was this morning was to inviting the life force to be able to feel that.
To be able to
feel the life force.
Feel the life force.
I don't know where that came
yeah,
in. That came in. So as I'm sitting this morning, I just went to the body to see where the life force was.
Mm-hmm.
And I had sensations that, I mean, it was as though, it was that letting, it's really hard to, it felt like letting go to just be with whatever that life force was in my body.
Uh-huh.
And having, you know, sensations up and down the spine and the front. And then realizing, it just felt like what dropped in then was, this is part of what's being pointed to.
Yes.
Because it took me to unconditional acceptance and love. It just, that's what was there.
Yes.
That's what the life force is. Or that's what I got.
Yeah.
And it's just so great to be in that place of, I don't know.
Right.
And then things just start to, as they're invited in, to appear, to be known, at that moment anyway.
Right. Yeah, the I don't know and the nothing wrong are such beautiful tools, aren't they?
Yeah, and conditioning really doesn't want the nothing wrong to be there.
Right.
It can't,
because
it can't.
That I can't work with anything.
Yeah.
Everything is a win for us when the nothing wrong is there. You know, because as you were saying that, so there I am, I'm doing an email class assignment, and it feels like, quote, I'm not getting it. So what? In the sense of there can be nothing wrong with what's going on with my experience with the email class, because it is the experience. Now, if it gets us to go, you know, on some subtle level, like, so therefore, I don't feel like it. I don't want to do it. Or I'm going to go on to something else. Or, but if we're willing to just stay here with that, then it just unfolds itself exactly as you described.
Yeah. And yeah, what came as you're saying that, it's just that constant invitation.
Yes.
I don't. Exactly. I really don't know anything.
Exactly.
So I'm just always inviting. And whenever I stay in that place, just these amazing, amazing things come up.
Right.
And it's relaxing. It's peaceful. It's.
Yeah.
But I watched also the process as I was doing that, with just as I was sitting in this meditation, of that constant. The scanning for something wrong, like as the body sensations that I'm noticing, well, that sort of hurts, or this sort of no.
Yeah.
And so the no is really important.
Restraint and religious observances.
Yeah,
that's the restraint, right?
Yeah,
because again, conditioning wants us to pull us off of that calibration.
Yes.
Oh, to label it, to make meaning out of it, to where your intention was simply to feel the life force. And all of it's life force. Of course it is, because we're life. Right?
Yeah.
So all we have to do is just stay with that experience of the life force.
Yeah. And the other thing that just jumped in too is that in inviting whatever it's going to be, the intent for the day or the focus, it's that ever-expanding faith, because sometimes things come in, I go, huh? You know, really? Okay. And sure enough.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. And just that training right there is huge.
It is.
Huge. Setting that intention for life to drop something in, being willing to, every morning, just see what that is. And even when there's a I don't see what the being willing to stick with it, and then something, we always see something from it.
Right.
And in that, we're being trained to calibrate to life.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is all super helpful. I was sort of having that same experience of, what?
Yeah.
With the assignment, and I read it a few times and recorded it. And so this is really, really helpful. And I'm seeing that that practice of going with what life drops in is a practice, definitely.
Yes.
And where I get hung up is with commitment that were previously made.
Mm-hmm.
So if life drops something in, and it doesn't seem to fit with what was planned, like there was a previous commitment, how to do that, you know? Because I have life dropping in a huge amount of stuff.
So you just want to say, but now, are you aware I'm one person? Just checking.
Yeah, and I would not sleep.
Yeah, I was just going to say, is the message that I don't even sleep?
So I'm working with that.
So all kinds of things dropping in. And then sort of looking at, gosh, how does the process of commitment work with that?
So I'm looking at that. I don't really know the answer at this point. I guess life will drop that in.
Well, and you know, it's that, as you say that, I just think of that place that we sometimes play with. Well, one time I'll try the strategy of, I'm going to keep that commitment, no matter what. Even if it seems like, well, actually now this other thing seems like it really makes more sense. And everything feels like it's, well, but you know what? This time, I'm going to practice keeping that commitment. Just to watch what goes on with that. And then another time, I'm going to practice, like, you know, there's this commitment, and then something else seems to be dropping in. I'm going to practice dropping that one and picking up this one. And then watch everything that happens there. Because what's so brilliant in that strategy is that in that, every process, both of life and of suffering, will be revealed to us. If we have no attachment to, well, now, is the way to go to keep all my commitments and to not change them no matter what? Or am I trying to look at which one's life is dropping in and which, right? It's all going to be revealed in that.
Yeah, that's great. So kind of experimentation. And watching awareness. Awareness, being aware of everything that's going on with whatever direction life takes me.
Kind of with that, what we were just looking at with Jan, of that place of, we see that, you know, it's the old, when we pay attention, everything enlightens.
Yeah, and there's fear in that. You know, I see the fear. So life drops something in and I need to change, communicate, because I think communicating, and I'm not going to keep a commitment, would be helpful to the other person that might be expecting something.
Right.
So there's fear in going to that person, and so I see the conditioning related to that.
That's one of the things, the processes that you'll get to see of all of, because it sounds like potentially one way that you would end up not changing the commitment is to attempt to avoid not having to go up against that fear of needing to communicate to this person.
And I actually, this happened to me last week. I did, conditioning was nagging me to call them on the other hand. So it was like, you know, projection that they were going to be really upset if I told them that I couldn't do something. And then, okay, well, I'm not going to call him yet. You know, because it was like at night or something. And then the next morning it was nagging me again to call him. So I called him, and they weren't upset at all. And so maybe that was not conditioning nagging me. But so it's just to see the whole process of of fear and then unconditional love related back to the emo class.
Yeah.
Because I've been using that mantra, I choose unconditional love.
Uh-huh.
Whenever it's going like 90 miles an hour,
right,
trying to decide what to do or whatever,
right,
I just keep coming back to I choose unconditional love.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't matter really what I do.
Right. Yeah.
To just keep in that process of awareness and unconditional love.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. I mean, as you were describing that nagging, mm-hmm, that whatever it is that's doing that, boy, that's a worthy opponent in terms of learning to direct attention, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, especially if you combine it with the process of commitment, you need to call that person, you need to call the person, yep, you're absolutely right, it's 9 o'clock at night, it's not the time to call that person.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and put it on our calendar for tomorrow morning at whatever time is the appropriate, there, it's on the calendar, 10:30. You got to call that person, you got to call that person, yep, it's on the calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Such a good directing attention,
mm-hmm,
exercise, because every time it starts in, instead of getting into that, it's just a reminder, I choose unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here. Not having that conversation. Don't need to have that conversation.
Right. Yeah, I don't need to have that conversation. And I did that, where it was about doing a series of things, like one thing, next thing. And so I said, okay, let's write it down,
uh-huh,
put it on the calendar, and then I didn't think about it anymore.
Yes.
I just did it whenever it came up on,
yes,
the calendar.
Yes.
And that's really helpful.
So,
yeah,
helpful.
Yeah.
So relaxing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to remember that when it's nagging me to, okay, yes, I need to do that. I'm going to go put it at this time,
yeah,
and then follow it, put it in my phone where it'll remind me, and
yeah,
just do it at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then just train to not have that conversation in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this morning it's just been going into like 90 miles an hour. So just, I know 90 miles an hour is not that fast for me. I guess 500 miles an hour.
You're quite a little head. Okay. The neural pathway is just going there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just...
And it's firing a lot.
It's firing a lot. And, it reminds me, Renee, of the thing that we talk about, that, you know, conditioning doesn't do that when it's not threatened. I mean, that's a lot of energy for it to be expanding,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the threat of well-being is equal to the speed with which, you know, conditioning is coming at us.
Yeah.
You know, gotta distract.
Wow, that's really good to see. Yeah, to remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a lot of heart opening things, mm-hmm, in the last day and a half, and,
uh-huh,
and I think that's where you're pointing at.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And you know, there'll be this thing that drops in about contributions and, mm-hmm, doing service and, mm-hmm, you know, doing for the love of others what you do for yourself, and,
mm-hmm,
and then boom, it'll come in with, yeah, but you know, you need to do all this, you know, and so I can totally see how that's trying to get me,
yes,
away from that heart opening,
yes,
lit up experience.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And if we take it back to the context of the email class, to move you from the real danger from conditioning's point of view of being in that, rooted in that unconditional love,
mm-hmm,
to be pulled over to the fear camp.
Yeah. That's really big.
Mm, really big.
Okay, so I'm going to stick with I choose unconditional love. I'm going to put it on the calendar.
Exactly.
And I'm going to experiment with what life drops in and previous commitments and see what.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing is I'm seeing right now is conditioning wants it all to be really orderly.
Yeah.
And, you know, like.
Linear
and
logical.
Yeah, especially, you know, when you've been trained the way I've been trained. And so it's like. You know, once you stick with one thing for a really long time, and it all works out.
Yeah.
That's how life works.
Yeah. Especially the "it all works out" part. According to its definition. Right?
Yeah.
Because, of course, it does always work out.
Mm-hmm.
Completely. Just us sitting here, you know, in this amazing life is proof, mm-hmm, of that. It's just that "it always works out" is such a narrow definition,
mm-hmm,
from its perspective. You know, it translates to, I get what I want all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I get to feel how I want, which is all by its, you know,
yeah,
standards.
Yeah.
not even really me.
Yeah, so to keep an eye on that, because that's called sometimes called commitment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that
mm-hmm.
sticking with it or
mm-hmm.
that linear,
mm-hmm.
you know, well, what are they going to think if I don't do this? You know,
right.
or something changes. Oh, my gosh, like
right.
nothing ever changes, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great exploration. Go ahead.
So, great conversation, and I love that. That stepping into the whoosh of life,
yeah.
you know, and I've just been looking at that lately and how doing that without doing it,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and I have this morning I was having there was a whole lot of this going on and
a lot of conversation
and a lot recently yelling at me about mm-hmm. my relationship with a mentor
uh-huh.
you know and
oh. it's definitely an expert on the mentor
yeah. what it should look like and that you know it's not
mm-hmm.
yeah so just kind of getting a little bit paralyzed this morning by that and you know then life just drops in. Pull a card from what universe are you creating?
Oh.
Guess what card came up? Mentor.
Oh. Doing prostration.
You know? So just reading that, I just, you know, it's like I can't move. So, okay, so here's this card. I'll read that card.
Yeah.
Into the recorder,
yeah.
and then reading that card into the recorder, and then having the door open,
yeah.
right. You know, it just makes me religious.
I mean, it does to me. It brings those tears of surrender that we were talking
exactly.
about earlier with Rebecca. Just like we're so exquisitely cared for. You know,
yeah.
I just have this image of, you know, when we're so in that conversation, the mentor has no access to us,
yeah.
and so it's this little tiny way that it can reach through.
Yeah.
To say, I'm completely here.
Yeah.
I'm completely
yeah.
here.
Yeah. And the great mystery, and, you know, I'm glad that's there, is, you know, what that was
yes.
that said to pull the card.
Right.
You know, it's like that was not on my calendar. It didn't feel accessible in that place of peril, you know,
yeah.
but it was.
Yeah.
You know, it just came in. And then to have that just kind of open the door,
yeah.
so then the mentor could speak
exactly.
with me.
Yeah.
And
to have enough training that you hear it
yeah.
and that you follow it.
Yeah.
Those are so key.
And that's so great, to, you know, because of course it wants to take that awareness, you know, right out the door.
But it's so, it seems so small,
mm-hmm.
but it's so huge because
mm-hmm.
it's all the access that life needs to us,
yeah.
needs for us when we're in this place, in
yeah.
that conversation, which we are.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been talking a little bit lately about how when we're in that conversation, and we're really in that conversation, there isn't really the ability to, at will, turn the attention to.
Yeah,
that's what's... So to have the training
yeah.
where there's the access for just that little tiny
yeah.
thing to drop in and the willingness to follow it,
yeah.
boy, that's so important.
So, I mean, yeah, it just seems huge. And I spoke last week and Thursday night group about the hawk, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was recording it then, and I was starting to... I was starting to record maybe a little bit about what was wrong, you know, and a hawk called and just, you know, completely brought me present and just completely changed the recording.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened again, and what was kind of fun was the hawk, when I really heard the hawk and got here,
mm-hmm.
and my recording changed, it was the second time the hawk called.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I was just on the program,
yeah.
and then it called again, and it's like, hawk, hawk.
Wow.
And so, you know, just seeing that, it's just that beautiful
yeah.
thing, too, of life not, just doesn't give up, you know.
Yeah.
And I can project. There are probably many, many times in my life when I would have sat through the hawk calling.
The darn hawk is ruining my recording.
And not heard that at all. You know, just continued with conditioned mind in whatever direction it was going. But you know, to have that kind of a wake up call and to wake up.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And to see that life just is continually reaching a hand in ways that, you know.
Yeah.
Learning to be open to, you know.
Because it's what we want.
Yeah, exactly. That's, yes, yes, that was what was coming of the whole conversation this morning. I mean, it's the deal.
It's the deal.
It's the whole deal.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's what the heart knows.
Yeah.
It's where to live. It's in that, you know.
Yeah.
Talk about unconditional and living in a friendly universe.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, you know, there's this knowing at the heart level, this is a friendly universe, and it keeps getting covered over and up with that fear that we talk about in that, you know, that first chakra gone awry, you know, sort of thing, you know, and that just that kind of, and so to just to see that it is a friendly universe, and life has never given up on us, it's always extending that hand, and, you know, just, and just, marvelous ways.
Yes, in marvelous ways that we actually want. And so when we do get caught up with this, you know, we never lose sight of on some level we're watching for life assisting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're available to that hand reaching out to us.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really fun thing to be looking for the hand.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good book. So
So I'm looking at one of the ways to one of the inner class assignments, and as I was looking at it, the energy focus challenged me to look at what would it feel like if I could only focus on process.
What would it feel like if you could only focus on process?
Because that's what the energy is.
Uh-huh.
In other words, if I'm in the process of insight, then I'm just going to be aware of insights.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of focusing on insight, is it possible to focus on what the energy of the inciting process is?
Yes.
You know?
Yes,
and so it's like, so watching that place of all of those. Before, in paying attention to identification, it felt like I was looking at the content of the identification as a way to inform being identified. But to look at it as the energy of separation versus the energy of connection, then all I get to experience on a process level is what's the flavor. Of that feeling, of that energy, and then in some strange way that I actually haven't intelligence hasn't passed this yet, but the sensation of the content doesn't matter. Why I'm identified, or what is being processed in the identification, or why I feel connected, or what are the components of that stop being relevant, and then there's the ability to just stay with the energy of it.
Right.
And the funny thing is that sometimes the energy of connection feels like the energy of separation, and the energy of separation feels like the energy of connection. And so it's confusing, but if I know the content of it, I can tell. So it works both ways, that the process focus eliminates any interest in the content, and the energy focus can get informed by the content of it. And so in the previous conversation, I have the experience of life dropping all kinds of things in. But if I recognize that as the energy of insight, I actually don't have to do anything about it.
Right.
And then I have that other experience of feeling very, very low energy, mm-hmm. and the energy of, okay, well, I have to find something to get myself going, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and that's not helpful because mm-hmm. there's not enough energy to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And it's so interesting, isn't it? Because that's the process of separation, right?
Yes, well,
as is the holding on to the inside, the process of separation.
Exactly.
It's separating us from the inside.
Yes. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's a movement away from the process, the energetic experience that I'm having.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it takes me a little bit back, again, to the conversation we had with Jan, that beginning to parse it into content and attach meaning and all of that is how to take us out of the process, the life process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that place of surrender is, you know, the other theme of this, the first theme of the class is the sense of being grounded.
Right.
And I just find that interesting. It's an interesting opposition that grounded is a different energy than red energy, which is so powerful, like raging and alive and vibrant and vitality and full of life force, doesn't correlate to what we call what grounded is.
Uh-huh.
And so it's an interesting, for me that's been an interesting exploration because the place where it came together was I had this experience of feeling like life wasn't, that I wasn't having the experience I wanted to have, right? Uh-huh. So I wanted to do something, there was a sense of being thwarted.
Uh-huh.
But that energy of being thwarted is also the energy of being grounded by life. Because if life was saying, you're not going anywhere, right?
Yep.
You don't know that.
Yep.
But you're going to struggle and whatever, and I'm going to hold you.
Yep.
And so it's just interesting to watch all the beliefs attached to energetic experiences.
Yeah.
And so that the whole of life force holding me was a different experience than all of life force propelling me.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was going right there as you were talking. I don't know if this is exactly what you're pointing at, but so the image as you were talking about that you're not going anywhere was one of, you know, so there's a child who's tantruming.
Yes.
And being completely held in that.
Yes.
And how, you know, even as the tantrum may still be going on, there's such a sense of being loved in that and being held in that. And it is, it's a rooted, but the energy can be really, really big.
Yeah, it's grounded and nurturing.
Exactly.
But that doesn't mean that the energy can't be big.
Exactly, yeah. In fact, you know, going back to both the conversations with Sequoia and Rebecca, that my experience of it is that when there is that tremendous realization of the ground of being, of that we are life, that surrendering to that, that where the emotion can come from in that is feeling so tremendously grounded and rooted because we're so clearly a part of it, not even a part of it, you can't say that, we are it.
Yes.
That there's nothing that could happen to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the hawk or there's something just about the experience of group this morning that's reminding me of the wild geese poem by Mary Oliver that over and over again announcing our place in the family of things.
Uh-huh.
So like that experience of hearing somebody say, "I choose unconditional love," and going there and doing that in an experience of feeling like challenged, like to come back. To I choose unconditional love and just that support all of these different forms of that. That form of it.
And there's something especially powerful about choosing it when it's challenging. Because there's that sense of, you know, even if just we can for 1 second choose it.
Yes.
It's that thing we've been throwing around a little bit lately, the 20 seconds of insane courage.
Yeah.
Right? So in the middle of whatever's going on, it's really something's wrong, or really it's terrible, or really whatever it is, to be able to choose that place of unconditional love, even for a second, there's just this tremendous intuitive sense of that changed something. Yeah. You know, that will never be wired that way in the same way again.
Exactly. Because we've been talking about, like, how fast can I get back to unconditional love? Yeah. Like, what's my personal best?
Yeah.
And you know, like, not, and that whatever's going on, that's my intention, you know? And even at the moment where it feels like the personal best might be 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It makes it playful, doesn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it was really amazing listening to that last conversation, because I was sitting here feeling like if you'd kind of asked for language about the experience, it was something like, I feel really stuck in identification. Mm-hmm. I feel really stuck. I feel identified with whatever's saying, I don't want to think of it. No,
right.
I don't.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel, and then something just dropped in, just, what's the energy of this like?
Yeah.
Where is it, like, the tension in the energy in the body? Mm-hmm. What's it like? And so it was that paying attention to the energy of identification. Mm-hmm. And that's been so much of the experience of, like, that just seeing the process of separation and all of the forms of it, but not... But from that way round, like, rather than, let's see. So say there's, like, a recognition of a particular type of identification. That can even get pulled off into something that's mine or personal. Mm-hmm. And instead just seeing that's the process of separation.
You mean kind of like what Ashwini was just pointing out.
Mm-hmm.
Then coming back to just, well, exactly as you described. What's the energy of it?
Yeah.
Instead of trying to parse, like, okay, yeah, that's what happens for me, and then I get told this, mm-hmm. and then I get pulled into that, mm-hmm. and then I... But just really bringing it, taking a step back, in a way, that process of holding it, you know, just like we were just describing.
Yeah, and I think the email class has been a great assistance with that, because the experience of the last week has been that there's this, like... surrender and deepening commitment to practice, and this opening up and seeing all sorts of forms of identification be revealed, and making behavior changes, and feeling the energy of connection and participation and part of and all of that, and then it's almost like the energy, the level of energy of that, to the level of the intensity.
The intensity is up off the couch to match that.
Exactly, mm-hmm. like the intensity of the identification is the level of intensity of the unconditional love, and that movement from unconditional love to fear and survival.
Yeah.
And so, as I've been in that experience of feeling and like that intense level of survival, fear, identification, there's been also, I've been really working with the two-handed recording tool, and the experience of that is that, so there's like the person talks, and just in the kind of active listening, there's the disidentification, because there's a that willingness to just really listen, just really listen, because in the experience of identification, there's no listening. The senses have been hijacked by it's this, you know, like attention's on the inside of the head. So to really listen to the sound of the human, you get to hear that. You get to hear that she's not. I don't want to drop this,
right.
Because you can hear the human. Suffering in the identification.
Yeah. Yeah. See, if what dropped in when you said that was, you can see the human willing to offer her, if you can say this, her authentic experience of the suffering.
Yeah.
But in other words, what we see is, what conditioning wants our attention on is the suffering. And supposedly, she doesn't want to, and she wants to hold on to the story. And but what it's mean as we really listen from that mentoring, from that life place, is just the authenticity.
Yeah.
That has all this kind of stuff piled on top of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing.
It you were talking about that intensity. So there's the intensity of all those things. It sounds like seeing a lot of identifications in the last week and then being really willing to work with that, behavior changes, and then feeling connection out of that and a part of it and all of that, that conditioning has to match that intensity. And what a judo move to step back from all of it and just experience the intensity. Mm-hmm. Instead of needing to parse it out into, okay, this is the good life stuff and this is the bad identification stuff.
Right.
But taking it to the email class and just experiencing the energy.
Yeah. That's amazing, because I think there's so much energy goes into controlling one versus the other. Because the experience was at that level of intensity of whatever. And then like losing focus and doing something really unfortunate. And that then, because so much energy goes into not being that and controlling against that and being out of that situation. It's okay if other people are, but you know, and like, but just so much energy goes into controlling to not be that.
Right.
So to have had an experience of being that, then it's like the zone of annihilation is dropping in, right? The way of transformation, like we can't be bamboozled into having awareness practice being so controlled that we never are in a place where we can be transformed and experience the bruised, battered, perturbed, annihilated.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And if we can be in that situation that we are supposed to avoid at all costs and be okay and not go to feeling bad, we can't be controlled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the campaign has been get me out of the monastery.
Yeah.
Well, which is supposed, that's the setup, right?
That's exactly
the
conversation
setup. That creates the behavior that maintains the conversation, that separate fear.
And the only reason it's trying to get you out of the monastery, that illustrates the willingness to see that experience as fortunate.
Yes.
It's labeling it as unfortunate.
Yes.
And if you would go along with that, there would need be no campaign to get you out of the monastery.
Right.
That's perfect. You're perfectly controlled.
Yes.
But if there's the willingness, right?
Uh-huh.
Because I still have to avoid that situation, I have to make sure I'm not in that situation, and so I'll just be really good and I'll be really whatever it is. But if you're in danger of seeing, wow, that was so fortunate that happened.
Yeah.
Because there's so much karma hiding there that's controlling this person. Wow. Bring it on, right? We got to get you out of the monastery.
So I could stay here and feel bad, and that wouldn't be a problem.
That's
for
fine.
I could just slink off and be separate.
Yeah. Hate these people, I'm terrible, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
On a given day, it's going to take whatever strategy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to be in danger of having the level of willingness that you talked about in the last week of, okay, I see this, behavior changes, you know, getting guidance about it, working with it, all those things. It's time to leave.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Thank you.
Karen?
I was going to talk about something that might seem unrelated, but it seems like
it's never unrelated.
Yeah. So it was kind of like pulling the mental card yesterday. I was in between things, and I had a very short period of time before I had to be. And somehow or another, I got into watching this video. I don't even know where it came from when I think about it. It just, there was, and I clicked, and there it was. And I thought, oh, that's interesting, and there I went. And it's about I don't think it's brand new, but it's a little bit new. It's a science called biomimicry, easy to say. And it's it relates to what we were talking about earlier, where we can listen to life dropping in, or we can have a will and do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like the world that we see that we have created has been created by the will. And what biomimicry, you know, mimicking life, is exploring is there's all these species of animals and creatures and life forms and plants and stuff that have been, that have evolved and that have existed for billions of years. So obviously they know how to exist in this, on this planet, in a way that also lets the planet exist. And so what the scientists are doing are starting to study the structures and the things and actually how things work, you know. And it's just so fascinating because, like, the colors of the of a peacock are like the most brilliant colors I've ever seen anywhere. Any, you know, the iridescence and the blues and the yellows and the greens. There's absolutely no pigmentation in a peacock's feathers. It's all structure. The way the feathers are created, when the light hits it, it reflects in a way that creates all that color. And so we create pigments, we create all these chemicals that we create. I mean, they don't exist in life, you know.
Well, they do, actually.
Well.
They do now.
But they're not, you know, life doesn't use them, toxic chemicals.
They didn't grow.
Yeah. And so life uses sun to create energy. We use fossil fuels, and we have to make all kinds of a mess to get it out. And it's limited, and all we know all about that. And we make all this concrete, and what we can do is make buildings out of a process that the corals make, I mean, that the creatures make corals out of. And not only would it be stronger, but it would sequester carbon, which is the big problem we have. This is all what life's already doing. And so it just seems to me that it's just an example of what conditioning is in relation to life. And when we talk about aligning ourselves with life, we're talking about doing what exists naturally and healthfully for
There's so much wisdom in how life is.
And it's taken billions of years to work it all out. And so why not just look at how it does it and copy it? These kind of beetles that live out in the desert where there's no water, they have these legs and that apparently fog comes there periodically, a couple of times a week or something. And their legs collect drips of water and they drink it. So now they're making, with that technology, they're making a water bottle that fills itself with that technology. So you put it over here, and a little while later, the water will be there, just like on the bug's leg. So I was just so inspired by that. And it's kind of like, well, duh, why has it taken us this long to kind of turn around and look at what they're doing and taking that technology, that the spider webs, their webs are so strong, stronger than steel, and they just, you know, float around and make this stuff. And
amazing. And yet humans are the only intelligent life form.
So it was just really inspiring to me to think that we have, no matter what we're trying to do, we have everything we need, and it's all here. And
it's that, it reminds me of that, you know, how we talked about that the intelligence of the universe is everywhere.
Everywhere.
You know, I was looking at that. I was sitting out on a deck, and a bird flew by, and I was reminded of, I was talking recently in a group of that experience of flying in dreams. And just that sense of, you know, none of us has ever flown, right?
I mean, not this way.
Exactly. And yet, completely know how that feels.
I don't. I'm always jealous when I hear people fly in their dreams. Tonight, can I fly?
But you know, that's such a perfect example of it, because It's like, I remember hearing someone talk once about doing yoga and doing a down dog and just suddenly realizing, you know, the universe knows how to do the perfect down dog.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that it's like the conversation I think we were having with Rebecca, that we're so trained to go to our little knowledge base, you know, this little tiny, you know, what I know. And it's so minuscule compared to what is, you know, the intelligence of life that's there to inform.
Yeah, all the life that we have created is a better idea, seems like. That's what came to me, is that, you know, oh, I'll make it this way instead of...
Yeah, maybe. Who knows, right? I mean, because here we are too, right? We're evolving how we evolve and doing
what
we do.
That's true, yeah. Getting, getting more bigger, intense brains in the process, apparently. Anyway, it seemed to relate in a way.
It's just fun to blow open that world of I know and what I know. We don't know. I mean,
absolutely don't.
There's some kind of random different things that were the life was dropping in that last conversation about. I was just hearing so much about the effortless, the Wu Wei, the water course way, the path of no resistance.
Yeah.
Yeah, just flow.
Right.
Now, conditioning is always, I mean, it's all about effort. Mm-hmm. And so when it gets a hold of practice, awareness practice, and it wants to turn the process of awakening into something that it's going to
do,
figure out.
And do it well and do it right.
Totally. I just got those great images from that last conversation about building big, huge skyscrapers out of concrete kind of thing.
Yeah.
The patchwork quilt of practice. I'm going to like collect all these insights and figure it out and put it together in the perfect recording that's going to like...
And then the poster and then...
Oh, my gosh!
I'm going to...
I was listening to some recordings recently. It was wild. And a couple of different experiences. One... I was listening to these recordings, and it was that experience of this guy who was trying so hard to get it, figure it out. And it was kind of like the mentor kind of talking. But yeah, just about like, you got to work on this, and remember to see that. And I was just listening to it this morning. It was kind of a shuffle recording from years ago. In the background, there was this gorgeous music. I mean, I don't even remember having that. I remember making that recording. I don't remember there being music. Like, what? Yeah, exactly. It was so fascinating because as I listened, the music took me right there. The music took me to an experience of presence, of bliss, of oneness. It was the experience that I was seeking, that I was hoping that all those words would get to the words and all this chatter that wound up kind of going to the background. Resonance tune into the music and then boom. Yeah.
That's another religious moment.
Totally, yeah.
Are you sure that music was there first?
I know!
You put that on the track.
It's kind of that, like, you know, we have to give it our very best effort, knowing it's the effort itself that keeps us from the experience.
And just the depth of practice of the guy listening.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
That's what he's listening for.
Right? There is that.
The experience that he wants to calibrate to.
Yeah. I love the different images of calibration. The radio dial, like, really trying to get it. Yeah. But there's also this effortless life calibration that's, like, always looking for that.
Yeah.
I mean, looking, in quotes. But it's just always...
Yeah.
That it vibrates at that frequency, and when it encounters life vibrating in that frequency, there's a knowing. Yeah. It's a giant yes. It's felt as a yes. All the energy centers light up, and it feels effortless. It feels grounded and passionate and alive.
Yeah.
It's all of that. Mm-hmm. That's just, I don't know. It's just fun. Mm-hmm. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I heard a lot in the group that was fun was that looking at the... energy, tuning into energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been playing with disidentifying, not just from the content of what's going on,
mm-hmm.
but disidentifying from the quality of mind.
Uh-huh. That's good.
So, yeah, so I see, like, there's a conversation that's... But then it's like, step back from that and see the conversation, but then step back from that and see, oh, busy mind. And it, there is this, definitely this way that ego kind of... it's like, if there's busy mind, it doesn't actually... the content doesn't matter at all. It'll plug in any content, and it fits that state, that energetic kind of state.
Yeah.
So just paying attention on that energetic level has been fun.
Yeah. It reminds me of their, that peace quote that came through. I can't remember exactly, but the one about, you know, why does it matter whether it's a busy mind or a quiet mind if we're not the mind?
That one was...
what difference does it make?
Huge! Yeah. Wow, that... some of these quotes lately, they, that, again, that just like, boom, it just took me right to that experience.
Yeah, yeah.
I use that as a mantra, and I said it all day long. That particular quote is another one that was the same experience, was the Zen master Rinzai quote, the there is nothing in this world that I dislike.
Yes.
It took me right there.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, first conditioned mind got it, I was like, what? How can, like someone else said earlier, that experience of with the email class assignment, and in my experience, every time there's a it's because life is right there, and there has to be some big, huge cloud of stupid dust to cover up that huge resonance.
Yeah.
But I read it the first time, I was like, how can I not dislike anything? And but the life was just going like, freedom!
Yeah, that's exactly it. How could I not dislike anything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun that those processes can happen simultaneously. Uh-huh. There is life resonating with life and freedom happening.
Uh-huh.
And then there's this like big cloud of confusion at the same time.
Yeah. And then what you talked about a minute ago of being willing to step back into that, it's a much bigger place, that freedom place, and it holds all of it. You know, kind of like we've looked at with a bunch of people, especially with Anna, that it can hold that Adamitha Shwani, it can hold that identification or that whatever it is that's happening. It's way big enough to hold that.
Very fun. Just wow. This morning, just blown away. I'm so grateful for this space and this practice that can hold all of these experiences and all of the courage that I project on every practitioner that just goes up against this stuff.
And it's so much fun, you know, people talking about the email class and, I see this, and I'm not, I wonder about that, and it's kind of confused, you know, and then we get to come together and look at it from all these different angles, you know, because I project for the rest of the day, or however long we keep working with that email class, everyone's going to see something else because everyone came together and contributed whatever they contributed.
I love how that happens. Sometimes it'll, just real quick, sometimes it'll happen where I'll leave group. Sometimes it was like conditioned mind going up to see, like, were there any amazing insights that I kind of gleaned from anyone else?
No.
Not so much. But then, like, 3 days later, something that, while I was in group, seemed kind of like a, well, duh, or you know, whatever. 3 days later, it'll come in like, wham! Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh! That's huge. And because so and so said this and the facilitator said that, I got to see something brand new.
It reminds me of what we were looking at with Rebecca, that whole mind place where, you know, it's all going in, you know, all up, and at some point on a Sunday start recording, and then as I'm recording, and then this happened in group, and this happened in group, and this happened in group, I'm not aware of remembering it, but as soon as the recording is happening, it's like boom, 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 it's all there.
It's such a huge argument for what we do in this, just saturating ourselves in this the wisdom of life. It's going in. It's making itself available on some level, whether we see it or not.
Yeah, and back to what Ashwini was talking about, of it's such an argument for not needing to get caught in the content of an insight. Right? Just be here and be in the process of being transformed.
Just letting it wash through.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of by osmosis, it's happening.
Thank you. Thank you all.